Asylum is back on the menu with a mockbuster title this week. So stupid and so brilliant at the same time. I am sure that this title fooled a ton of people. Will a knockoff of Robots versus Monsters work on a micro budget, or was this another oceanic movie doomed from the very start? Find out along with us this week. This is Kaiju versus History, Atlantic Rim?
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your hard drinking Armada pilot, Miles, and joining me is a giant monster smashing through the Statue of Liberty, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing this week?
Good. when are we getting Indian Ocean Rim, Antarctic Ocean Rim?
Oh boy. Two of these was enough.
One was enough.
Yes, obviously. Thankfully, Asylum doesn't seem to have the budget for animated stuff, so we didn't get, like, you know, a comparable to Pacific Rim the Black.
Thank goodness.
It was called Pacific Rim the Black. Yeah, I didn't realize this came up before Pacific Rim, but I know this is Asylum's kind of MO, is that they put out their mockbusters, like, in an effort to beat the movie that they are mockbusting.
Yeah.
To Walmart shelves, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Their release date. Indeed, this movie came out apparently in the UK, June 24th, but in the United States, July 9th. And Pacific Rim, which we'll be talking about spoilers next week, its official, I think, release date in the US was July 12th. It had its premiere in Mexico City because, of course, the director is from there, Guillermo del Toro. But we're not talking about Del Toro this week. We're talking about Jared Cohn's Atlantic Rim 2013 mockbuster film. And, you know, I was too hard on the Mega Shark series, Miles, because moving over to the mockbuster side of Asylum's kaiju films and having a hard time with this one, this direct to DVD film.
I do and I don't. We're gonna, I mean, this is not some big come to bat for this. No,
Miles loved Atlantic Rim, everyone.
But yeah. I will say that, like, I mean, we've breached into the time where, like, you know, every now and then they put out something that is at least digestible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there has been big talk about how, like, their Transformers mockbuster movie is solid. Haven't seen it. Transmorphers. Yeah,
I can't believe that.
I hear across the board that, like, it's one that's like, no, this one's kind of fun. And I can see the argument for some of that because, like, people are watching these movies. That's why they keep making them. But every single time I watch an Asylum movie, I'm just like, who is this for? Like, who is entertained other than, like, seeing this on the Sci-Fi Channel, you know, at, you know, Friday night at 9, you know, and this one has some notoriety because it was also chosen to be part of the, I think it was the Gauntlet,
basically
season of MST3K. Yeah,
the second return season, which is only like 6 movies on Netflix. 6 movies. Yeah. And that is the first time I had seen it.
Yeah, it was the first time I had seen this film either. I was watching the season 12 of MST3K.
And spoiler warning, in that season, that is the first film, I think, done on MST3K from a movie released in the 21st century. So this is like the first Asylum they had done, but also the first kind of modern film. And it was a bit of a gamble because MST3K for, you know, hundreds of episodes had been really, I would say, 50s to 80s primarily.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, some people love to harp on season 12, but I think season 12 has, like, legit one of the best episodes of MST3K ever made.
Yeah, that was the Mac and Me season.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty big coup for them to get, I feel like.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about MST3K all of this episode, Miles.
Because so I watched this.
Did you Raw Dog Atlantic Rim?
I was trying not to say that. Yeah, but yeah, I did. I watched Atlantic Rim.
You straight, no chasered Atlantic Rim.
Yeah, unfettered by Jonah and the bots.
Well, I watched the MST3K again. It doesn't help it that much, Miles.
One of the better episodes. And cause sometimes, you know, if a movie just isn't that bad or isn't that bad enough, it doesn't really lend itself to being enjoyable. And that's kind of the case here. Before we get into anything else, Patrick, tell me what's in a title.
Well, you know how Guillermo del Toro's movie is called Pacific Rim, like Pacific Ocean. This movie is called Atlantic Rim, like the Atlantic Ocean. And that's pretty much it. But this was released in DVD format in other countries and had some interesting names in other territories as well. Battle of Atlantis, I think, was the translation in the Japanese. Attack of the Atlantic Rim was another title. One of the better ones was Circle of Monsters, and that will lead into spoilers, some of the alternative titles for Pacific Rim that we got. But Attack from Beneath was another alternative title here. And what else? I don't even think I translated all these, but there was other alternative titles. I don't know if they ever made it to a DVD box, but Attack from the Atlantic Rim and From the Sea were some of the alternative titles for this film. And I think once the shock value of, naming it Atlantic Rim to try to trick people that were looking for Pacific Rim kind of wears off, they rebrand these and maybe sell them as kind of other films, even though for the most part, this is kind of the same story, Pacific Rim, just, you know,
no, it's not pilots. Really. It really isn't.
It's not worse. You think they're the same?
No, it's not the same.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's about mech pilots in giant robots fighting CGI monsters that come up from the depths, but instead of the Pacific Ocean, indeed, it takes place in the Atlantic. It takes place in a whole different ocean, which I don't know if that's a big boon or discredit to this film, but it is funny. That's what they went with, you know. Not like Pacific something else. They went with like the other ocean, which I do find comedically pleasing. Like they could have gone with, I don't know, Pacific Monsters or something like that. You know what I mean? As the title here.
But yeah.
Atlantic Rim is really thumbing their nose at
Yeah, I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. Now, prior to this, had you seen this outside of the MST3K?
No, that was the first time I had seen this movie. Oh, was I aware that this existed? I think so. I think this is of the time when I really became very cognizant of what Asylum was doing with Transmorphers. And
Transmorphers was the one where I was like, oh, okay, this is what this company does. You know, I knew the name of the company. Mm-hmm. But Transmorphers was where I was like, oh, okay, this is who these people are. And well, then
the same
Sharknado
year
happened, I think.
Yeah, the same year Sharknado happened. And I think Sharknado came before this. Let me see.
I think no, so. Oh, Sharknado was what, 2012?
Came out, it was 2013. It came out the exact same time. It came out July 11th. So like a week after Atlantic Rim. So I think that's why I became aware of that movie is, you know, Sharknado, as terrible as it was, is technically a very original idea, I hope. Is there another Tornado of Creatures movie out there?
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, it's in the same universe as Lavalantula and Two Lava, Two Lantula. I'll never get over that. But I think when I really became super aware of them, Transmorphers, I remember seeing the DVD at Walmart, as I referenced earlier. But also, you know, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, because that trailer, as we mentioned, the episode went really viral that year.
Yeah. So this is definitely, I mean, The Asylum had been making non-knockoff movies for like over a decade before they really kind of leaned into the mockbusters. But I think around the time that Mega Shark and then Sharknado came out is when people, I guess, became super, super hyper aware. But I was not in at the time the mode of like, oh, let me seek out this film and watch it, you know, anytime around actually seeing the movie that I'm interested in at all. But yeah,
I just remember the dude from Witchblade was the star of this movie.
Yes. And a few other interesting folks. So I suppose we could talk a little bit more about the cast. I feel like the biggest get, the main standout, is Graham Greene, who is our vice admiral in charge in the film. And
he is a standout. He's a great actor. He's a storied actor. But boy, howdy, was he asleep in this production.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
like, I'm pretty sure someone had cue cards like in front. Like he was like, I'll show up, you know.
And I love him in so many movies. So, I mean, obviously Dances with Wolves. It was a big one. Yes. for him. But he was also a cop in the third Die Hard movie. You've seen him in a lot of things.
Oh, you've seen him in so much stuff. He's also in the Green Mile. And
he's a Native American actor who has been in a lot. He's been acting for like over 40 years. It does seem like Asylum really loves to cast one, I guess, well-known actor or an older actor for these admiral or general roles that probably can, all their scenes can be filmed in like a weekend. You know, it's not like Graham Greene was doing like a ton of stuff. He actually did show up in like the final scene of the movie with all the actors, but
it was probably that the last day of that weekend.
But yeah, it was like the Robert Picardo,
yeah,
in versus Crocosaurus. And who else have we seen in Asylum films that have made us scratch?
Oh, Ray Wise. That was Big Ass Spider. Sorry, that wasn't Asylum.
Oh, right. Spoilers. We're watching Big Ass Spider in 2 weeks.
I forgot we're doing these out of order.
Yeah, I thought there was one more, but I think we go on to some of these other films, and that is always a position where they have like an older, more seasoned actor. And Graham Greene here is, I think, probably the biggest get for those performances. He is not doing a ton of new stuff, and his character, they make a joke about it in the MST3K episode, says capiche, like capish. It's like, what? Did he just not take a second time? Did no one say anything? Does this character say capiche? Like
you also have Treach from Naughty by Nature.
Yes, as one of the three main pilots. And I've written my joke here is, this leads me to believe that indeed OPP stands for the Other Pacific Picture. Miles, get it? It's not Pacific.
Honestly, he was not bad.
Surprisingly, yeah, he's
he was actually pretty good. He's of the three, he was probably the best. You can tell that he was actually trying to act. I mean, unfortunately, he was having to act this script, but he was pretty good. I gotta give credit where credit's due. I think he was the strongest presence in the film.
Well, I was about to say the other third pilot who we haven't mentioned is Tracy, who's played by Jackie Moore. And I didn't think I would miss Sarah Leaving, but I really missed having Sarah Leaving in my Asylum film. She was pretty rough.
She wasn't given much to do. I mean, she's written pretty cardboard here.
I mean, all of the main pilots, I just, you know, oh boy, had a hard time enjoying any of them.
It sucks because, like, I mean, every single time I think, okay, I'm going to give this movie slightly a chance, you know, mm-hmm. And every single time, you know, Asylum, you know, shows me why I shouldn't. And I think the writing for the three pilots here is a pretty good reason as to why you shouldn't, because not only are you given the most stock characters, you have the kind of bleeding heart, the crazy fly boy, and then the girl one, which unfortunately that's all of her character is she's the girl one. You have a forced love triangle that is almost immediately forgotten.
Extremely awkward and also somehow boring.
Yeah.
It just seems like all these pilots do on their downtime is take shots and screw around in like a Mardi Gras style way, like walking through town.
Oh, that Mardi Gras parade, it was hilarious. Yeah, it was just like, call your friends. We're going to show one half float. And I think there's something so weird about how these movies aren't necessarily PG-13, I don't think, but they feel so sanitized.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's just everything feels watered down. And yeah, there's nothing to these characters. And that's what's so annoying about these movies is, like, you could give these movies like some proper credit if they were doing a mockbuster style thing, like, well. Like, I get that, like, they're not supposed to be, like, shockingly enough, they're not supposed to be super funny. But, like, I mean, if you at least employed some sort of, like, you know, airport airplane situation here and kind of lean into it a little bit, as opposed to just, oh, we're just going to Xerox this movie and just do it badly. And, yeah. And I think with everything that we've watched so far, this is, at least for this particular podcast, this is where the Asylum have full on displayed that, because the Mega Shark movies are their own thing. You know, they're not particularly responding to anything in particular. And, you know, Monster and King of the Lost World were, you know, still in its infancy. They were just trying to take advantage of something that was going on. Here is where you have an actual one for one. Like, this movie is full on trying to cash in on Pacific Rim with the exact same, you know, conceit, even if it's not the same thing. And
but it's so funny how much it fails to hit that mark. You know, I think with Monster aping off of Cloverfield, they had an excuse in that they had no idea what Cloverfield was going to be about while making Monster, because the marketing basically gave you nothing except found footage, monster attacks, giant city. Don't even know what the monster looks like, I think, in any of the trailers at the time. So, but this one, I feel like they, you know, it was at least the story elements were out there. You know, we'll talk about when we talk about Pacific Rim, but, you know, they sold the rights to the story, and like, it was Hollywood Reporter news that, you know, Del Toro was on to direct this picture. So at the very least, they understood it was like giant robots fighting monsters. And that's really as deep as they went. And I don't think they were trying necessarily to, you know, take what that movie was. So to me, this doesn't really feel too mockbustery outside of the title. It really feels like it's more of the Asylum films than, you know.
Well, because the title is so purposeful, and yes, the monsters are coming up from somewhere. And here's the thing. This movie's production value in terms of like the special effects isn't awful. What sucks really is the robot designs. Like, I like the fact that they did attempt some individualized robots here, and each one, like, seemingly towards the end having like a specific weapon or skill. That is cool. But the actual designs of the robots look like someone's like Kinect project, you know?
Yeah, it looks a little like they're Transmorphers, which, like you said, I haven't seen, you haven't seen, but it also, I don't know, it just doesn't look like what
they're lacking personality.
Yeah, what they were going to eventually get to. It doesn't look like giant robots that people created for the purpose of attacking.
Right. Now, that said, the monsters, not bad.
Yeah, monsters are fine in this. They're a little CGI dragony, but I was actually surprised that they there were different monsters, and they were just like big old waving tentacles coming at the.
Yeah,
the
no, I mean, I even liked that one of the monsters like had a perpetual googly eye.
Yeah, But yeah, I don't even have like anything written down for the monsters or the robots in this film. Do you have any favorite scenes? Do you have anything that sticks with you from this film?
Let's see. Yeah. There's in the scene where that you have the awkward love triangle being introduced, they're all drinking and have been drinking after they, you know, defended the city. And they get called to, this is the dumbest thing that I was looking at. They get called to back into duty because, you know, shit's hit the fan yet again. And so as they are leaving, and you see several drinks on their table. Treach, I can't remember his character's name. Is it Jimmy? Jim?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, Jim Rushing. Just tosses a $20 on there, a $20 bill on the table, and then they all leave. And I'm like, there is no way $20 took care of all those drinks. I don't know why that stuck out to me and why it bugged me so much, because they each have like a couple drinks, and they've been drinking for a little bit. And I don't think they were buying it like one at a time. The only thing I could say is maybe some of those drinks had been purchased for them, because at the beginning of the sequence, we do see a civilian buys them shots.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, as a thank you to save the city.
For your monster fighting service.
But like, I saw that $20 bill and I was like, bro, no, absolutely not.
That's the thing that stuck with you so good.
The other thing that stuck with me is at the end when everyone's kind of doing a little pound it, you know, and every single person misses everyone else's fist.
And it's in slow motion too.
It's in slow motion.
You notice it even more for some reason. Like they wanted to show you, it's like, yeah, they didn't get it on this take, so we just didn't do it again.
It's so great. Those are the things that stick out to me. Not the monster fights, not the really awful Jimmy saves a girl from a burning building, and the little girl is like, first, like super stranger danger, which, you know, on one hand, in any other situation, that's the correct response. When the building's burning down around you, you just grab a hand, like keep it on. Like that whole sequence is very stupid. And then we get introduced to his superhero name, which is Superfly, which apparently everyone knows because someone mentions it as soon as he gets out. We as the audience, I think we're just being introduced to it. And I was just like, this is very stupid. There's very little about this movie that isn't stupid. I think this movie does get some leeway from folks on the so bad it's good scale because the production value is decent, even though everything else kind of sucks about it. So when you have something like an MST3K kind of razz it, that can make some people, you know, enjoy a little bit more. Unfortunately, it's not even one of the better MST3K episodes. Like, it's fine, but like, it doesn't elevate this movie at all. This is not Manos the Hands of Fate.
It adds maybe like 1 point to my enjoyability, maybe 2 points to watch the MST3K version. But normally MST3K just makes a bad movie great and makes it so I can actually watch it multiple times. This was, even the MST3K version was a slog. And I will say, we'll talk about the technicals in a little bit, but just little things make me laugh in that. Like one of the first scenes in the movie is Graham Greene coming into like the war room, the situation room, and there's three other people there. And he's like, where is everybody? There's like 20 tables and it's like only three people in the room. He's like, well, there's traffic on the 9 or whatever. He's like, well, I took a helicopter. It's like, no, you just didn't have the money to pay like a ton of extras for this war room scene. And so you did it with the three actors that you have, you know. It's one of the very first, it's the first Graham Greene scene in the movie, so it really stands out to me. And his characters are so over the top. They used him a lot in this film. I was actually surprised. I didn't remember him as much. But yeah, oh boy. We talked about in these other movies how Asylum does not try to make bad movies. They don't try. They set out to make a good bad film. But, you know, with something like Megashark versus Giant Octopus, the first of the Megashark series, I can totally believe that they're really playing it straight. It's not bad in any way, really, besides the CGI. It's just none of it's good. But with this movie, I feel like they're pushing that concept because there's so many parts of the dialogue and the acting that feels tongue in cheek. feels really poor to the point of like they're trying to make it humorous a little bit. And it's hard because it's like they are toeing that line in this film. Miles, you'd be interested to learn, and I think IMDb gave me this factoid and I had to look it up. This is a very well regarded bad film. It is widely lambasted for being one of the worst movies, and indeed is the 42nd, I believe I counted, 42nd worst reviewed film on Letterboxd, like of all time.
I feel like that's probably more exposure based than anything else, because I feel like I've seen like 40 worst movies for this podcast. I know I haven't, but like, well, I think, the same time, like whenever I hear this, oh, it's considered one of the worst movies of all time, I'm just like, I feel like anyone who says that hasn't seen that many movies.
You've not seen Queen Kong. No,
absolutely. But like, even outside of the kaiju like space, like there's so many terrible movies. And at least this one is like, you know, passable. Like, you know, you watched it, yeah, it's not good, but like, did I hate my life the entire time? Not really. Will I watch it again on purpose? No, but like, I have had far worse responses to far worse movies.
I mean, hilariously, Queen Kong is still our worst rated film. Is that right? I forget now.
because I think the Naked Monster, it was close, but
oh no, it wasn't. I don't think it was. I think Queen Kong is still our only one out there.
I think that's correct.
Has a Queen Kong on Letterboxd has a 2.6, which is basically equivalent to a 5 out of 10, whereas it's like a 1.24.
That's insane
for this
that
movie.
Is actively insane.
But yeah, that's like there's almost 100,000 films on Letterboxd. So I was surprised, but it is along the lines of the worst film on reviewed film on Letterboxd is the live action Dragon Ball Evolution movie. But
again, you have not seen enough movies if that's the worst movie of all time.
Well, the thing is expectations. I think people expected like
I don't care what they expected. It still doesn't mean it's the worst movie of all time just because, oh, I wanted this to accurately depict the anime that I love. Shut up. Go away.
Maybe you'll agree with the live action M. Night Shyamalan Avatar The Last Airbender, because that is worse than this film.
Never saw it. Didn't want to.
Live action Cats, Miles, did you see that
one? Nope. Didn't see that either.
Yeah, well, there's a reason you shouldn't, and I apologize that we had to watch Atlantic Rim, but we did.
I'm just saying, there are far worse movies than any of the ones that you just mentioned.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the legacy for this film is it does have a sequel. As soon as the Pacific Rim Uprising, I think, was announced, they announced that Atlantic Rim Resurrection would be coming to DVD at the exact same time. Indeed, another Mockbuster sequel, which is hilarious to me, because, you know, we'll talk about it. Pacific Rim did okay. It did like Clash of the Titans money. So I think it was a pretty big letdown from what people were expecting that movie to do. So I was surprised, one, 5 years later, it got a sequel. And two, yeah, they decided to keep mockbusting them.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're gonna look at that movie as well. Are you ready to get to rating Atlantic Rim?
Yes.
I didn't enjoy this movie. I'm not going to lie. Watching even the MST3K version, which is somehow shorter than the runtime of the movie itself. Like, I don't know what they cut, because they add in all the skits and stuff. Even then, it is still quite a slog. And I remember when it was announced for the gauntlet of MST3K, I was so excited to see what it would be like to have modern films be subject to the riffing. But I, you know, they've done a couple of 21st century films since. None of them are very good. It just, for whatever reason, I don't think it works that well, you know?
Right.
I think the sweet spot for me at this point is I love watching 90s movies get riffed on Riff Tracks or MST3K. But yeah, watching this without MST3K was nearly impossible. I'm judging it on that. And on that, my personal enjoyment is 3 out of 10 for this movie. I somehow got more enjoyment out of the Mega Shark films. What about you, Miles?
I don't really care for this movie. I didn't have the worst time. It is pretty stale, but I mean, to me, it's the production value is decent enough that, I mean, you can follow the movie along and, you know, okay, now it's robot time. Okay. It can hold your attention for, you know, when, if nothing else is on, but it's not something that you're going to really ever go back to. I didn't love it. I didn't even have that good of a time. I'm giving it a 4 out of 10, so a little bit higher than you, but like, I
a ringing endorsement.
I do think that like it's still below baseline good, but it's not like the worst thing I've ever seen either. So like it's kind of right there at a 4 out of 10, which is not it's not a ringing endorsement at all.
Well, you've been harping on the technicals being so good. What do you give it for its technical score?
So again, an asterisk needs to be given there. It is good for an asylum film.
I think it's pretty great for an asylum film, but that's a very low bar.
That's still a low bar. I'm still giving it a 5. Like,
yeah,
I do think that the CGI work for the monsters and the robots and the fighting, and even some of the sea exploration stuff where the robots are in the sea, is passable.
It's borderline competent. I would say it is right up there with the film Behemoth that we kind of
it's borderline. They are getting so close to actually being like adequate. However, the script is absolute dog do.
The main characters, they're just so uninteresting. You know,
they're uninteresting, but that's not necessarily the fault of the actors, even though the actors aren't that great.
No, like, the characters. I think it's really writing. You're right.
It is. So I mean, the thing is, I do agree with you that, you know, Tracy is really wooden, and some of that could because the actress, because I mean, she's not wonderful, but you know, I also think she had nothing to work with, so it's, you know, it's kind of a double whammy there. So yeah, I mean, it gets a 5, but that's just by the skin of its teeth for me. how about you?
Yeah, same 5 out of 10, and I will add that surprisingly the CGI is the best aspect of its technical, you know, part of the film. The directing isn't terrible in the fact that, you know, I just, like you said, I think all the production value avenues from kind of locations and things and you know, dolly cameras and things like that just seems like one step above what we normally get with Asylum. Yeah, that being said, there's just so many aspects that are not good about this film, and we didn't even talk about it, but like the cockpits for the Armada robots, just
horrible.
It does look like they're just sitting at like a table, and they're wearing these like wetsuits with like little pieces of tape on them, like different colored tape. So you got the Red Ranger, the Green Ranger, the Blue Ranger. Somehow the terrible CGI is the best part of the technical aspect. So 5 out of 10. For its importance as a kaiju movie, it's funny because I think Pacific Rim is more of a kaiju film. This one is more closer to a Transmorphers giant robot movie. But I feel like this movie is more important to Pacific Rim than it is to itself. It's not really adding anything to the kaiju conversation. But at this point, getting an Asylum knockoff is kind of a badge of honor for any blockbuster movie, because it's saying that movie that's coming out is going to be so hyped and so good and anticipated by the masses that they can, like a remora eel, just suck the life blood out of the shark film.
I want to be careful with that, because I do agree with you, but like at the same time, like getting an Asylum mockbuster is not like getting a Weird Al parody, because Weird Al is tremendously amazing at his job, and having a Weird Al parody is a badge of honor. This is like, oh, it's cool that we're big enough, this is happening, but I'd rather you didn't.
Yeah, that's the thing. I never can imagine Asylum film is going to hurt the bottom line of the movie that it's mockbusting.
No, never.
But it, for me, it does feel like Pacific Rim is more of a big deal because it got this treatment. But yeah, this movie barely stands on its own legs, but somehow was good enough for Asylum that it got its own sequel. So,
well, it also got its own sequel because they're following the numbers, they're following the trends of what they're just, whether it did well or not. You were getting another one if another Pacific Rim came out. Like, it doesn't matter.
I don't know if that's true, but it did happen. So I'm giving a 4 out of 10 for its importance, which where's that landed on our scale? 4 out of 10 is soulless. So yeah, fairly, I would say. What about you, Miles? Where are you rating this one?
Gosh, I'm not gonna lie. I think I'm gonna go lower in terms of where it stands in the annals of kaiju history. Yeah, I'm going for 3 out of 10. I think this movie is it offers nothing. It really does. I mean, it could, you know, help you get rid of 100 minutes or however long this movie is, but it's not good.
It's like an hour 20.
And it doesn't really do anything. Yeah, this movie does nothing for me in that respect. I don't really think it's even like the, I think what sucks about it is it doesn't even understand. And I get they didn't have the script, but like at least have some foresight of what you are supposed to be mock busting. Like there, none of the kaiju part of this is really factored in. It's like, oh, robots, monster. Okay, we'll do one of those. And it doesn't even like attempt to go into like why Pacific Rim was being made, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm good.
So that leaves your score and mine both at a nice even rounded 4 out of 10 and a podcast final of 4 out of 10 for Atlantic Rim, Miles. And that puts it pretty much tied with most of the Asylum films. We just gave Crocosaurus 4 out of 10 versus a giant octopus, only a 3 out of 10, and Monster a 2. So it's actually on the higher end of the Asylum films thus far. And yeah, what high marks for this one. Right. So that's going to do it for us. Let's join the conversation online. If you enjoy the podcast, by joining the Cosmic Crit Discord, emailing us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Finding us on social medias at Kaiju Versus History, and we're checking out our Letterboxd. We mentioned Letterboxd a bunch this episode, but you can see what we have reviewed in 5-star format and also take a look at upcoming movies in the future, like what we're doing next week. What are we doing next week? We only mentioned it 8 times, Mike.
Right. Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. And we're going to catch you next time. And now that we have eaten our mock-busting veggies, it's time to cut into the thick steak that is the feature attraction. We're going to take a look at Guillermo del Toro's passion project that combines his love of giant robots with his love of kaiju. It is a pastiche that is all original in a way that only the soon-to-be Academy Award-winning director can achieve. That's right. Tune in next week for History versus Pacific Rim.